March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Carrington Harrison,
back-to-back best sports talk host, as voted on in the Pitch Magazine.
Live from the Ben Studios, here's CDOT.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You were listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Excited, thrilled, delighted to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Friday. Rob Brenton is here as well. We are getting excited for our Royals Roundtable coming up later today with Michael Massey and Kyle Isbell. They will be talking to Josh Vernier later today at Hollywood Casino. Speaking of Josh Vernier, he is going to be on the show coming up today in 2 hours to recap what happened yesterday on opening day. There are so many highlights that we could potentially play, but this one just feels very fitting given what happened yesterday.
In comes the 2-2 pitch. Ground ball third. Runner's going to try to score. The runner at third, Blanco's caught in a rundown. And now they are able to tag him out. Now the runner to second is caught between second and third. And racing back towards second out there, and then they tag the runner who came back from first base. And the Royals really botched that.
So we got a lot to get into in today's show. Again, my name is Carrington Harrison. Rob is here taking you up until 6 o'clock. Before we get into the Royals and we get you a random lineup, I need you guys to do me a couple of favors. Number one, I need you listening to The Drive each day at 2 o'clock. And number two, I need you to tell one friend. It would be great if you could tell two friends, but you know what? Telling one would suffice to check out the show. All right. I am not here to beat up on the Royals. The Royals lost one baseball game. They have 161 of them left. Now, sure, we're going to get our jokes. We're going to have our fun. That's usually what we do here. But the sky is not falling. The Royals are going to lose 62 games. They're going to win 62 games. And it's the games in the middle that decide whether or not this team is going to go back to the postseason. So I am not here to kick the Royals while they are down. But what I would like to point out is yesterday, I think, answered all of the Royals' questions. And I also think it answered all of the questions all at one time. Let me explain. If you are very optimistic about the Royals this season, you saw an inning that highlighted why you should be so optimistic. The Royals scored 3 runs yesterday because of 2 things. They scored because of Bobby Witt Jr.'s speed. That same ball, if that is hit by 95% of Major League Baseball, that's an out, and the inning is over. Bobby Witt Jr. fast enough, he hits it, safe. All right, you get to keep the inning over. And then one of the developing best young power hitters in baseball hits a home run. It is now 3-0. If you believe in this Royals team and feel like they can win the American League Central, they are going to win the American League Central because of those skills. I don't think that Cole Reagans was great by yesterday, but Cole Reagans gave you a decent start. Bobby Witt Jr. displayed why he's one of the more unique and special talents in Major League Baseball. And Vinny Pasquantino hit a home run and looks like somebody who could hit 25, 30 home runs this season. If you are a Royals believer, they gave you reasons to believe yesterday. They answered your why I think they will make the playoffs this year questions. That's good. If you are wondering how the other shoe will drop for the Kansas City Royals, if you are wondering how this season could potentially not live up to expectations this season, they also showed you that as well. Now, Rob, a couple of days ago, you and I were going through some of the things that we were worried about with the Royals. I mentioned Seth Lugo. He has only had 1 season like last year. Other than that, there's not really a history and a track record that would show you that Seth Lugo is what we saw just a season ago. You said that's not your question. What did you say your biggest question was with the 2025 Kansas City Royals?
I said my biggest question was the bullpen, followed by the corner outfield positions, left field specifically.
Well, let's take a closer look at that. The bullpen lets you down at almost every single step yesterday. Angel Zerpa gets into the game. I mean, the first pitch, it was on the first thing smoking to the fountain deck yesterday. They tried a bunch of different relievers yesterday. None of them able to shut the door for this team. Now, again, it's one game. I'm not here telling you to give up on the Kansas City Royals. But if you had questions about the bullpen coming into this season, the Royals did absolutely nothing yesterday to calm your fears. This will be something that we will monitor. This is something that we are going to track throughout the season. They don't have the proven arms and proven experience in the bullpen. And that showcase yesterday, that is a game that was right there for the taking. The Royals could have won that game yesterday, and their flaws outweighed what their strengths were. So we mentioned Bobby Witt Jr. We mentioned Vinny Pasquantino and how they came through. Now we're moving to the other side of the coin, talking about the bullpen. And then the outfield. Hunter Renfroe, it's simple. You're not good enough on offense to be the minus defensively that you were yesterday. You were bad yesterday. Whether it was tracking a ball and turning what probably should have been a double into a triple, whether it was multiple times you had a chance to showcase the arm and potentially get somebody else at home, you didn't show an ability to do that yesterday. Another ball got hit into the gap. Hunter Renfroe, if you're not going to bring it with the bat on a game-in, game-out basis, what you at least got to do in the outfield is you got to be a plus defender. You were none of those things yesterday. That's a problem. We mentioned that there were a handful of Royals that need to break through in order for this team to potentially win 90 games. Kyle Isbell was one of them. I still have no clue what Kyle Isbell was doing on second base. What are you looking at? Where's your head? The Royals had first and third with no outs in the eighth inning, down one run. You got to figure out a way to scratch across one. Nobody's saying that has to be a crooked number inning. You don't got to put up four. But if the Royals do what they're supposed to do in the eighth and the ninth inning, today's a different conversation. Today's a different day. The Royals held on. Their bullpen did what they were supposed to do. And the Royals are 1-0 on the season. That's not what happened yesterday. So I don't think that today's conversation needs to be completely tearing down the Kansas City Royals. Again, it's one game. They play 12 more against the Cleveland Guardians. They play two this weekend against them. There's clearly, obviously, a lot of baseball left. But regardless of what side you are on, the Royals either answered your questions or answered your questions. If you want to know why they can make the postseason, they'll make the postseason because of Bobby Witt Jr. They'll make the postseason because of Vinny Pasquantino. They'll make it because of Salvador Perez. They'll make it because of those pieces. I think that Cole Reagans will be better in starts than he was yesterday, even though I don't think he had a bad start. If you are wondering where this thing could go wrong and how it could potentially slide off the tracks a little bit, they showed you that yesterday too. And the two biggest weaknesses that people wanted the Royals to address, they broke down in game one. Their bullpen wasn't good enough to bring that thing home, and their outfield yesterday was a net negative for the team. A net negative. Whether it was Kyle Isbell, whether it was Hunter Renfroe, those two were a net negative yesterday, and ultimately, it ended up costing the Royals in their first game of the season. We're going to be joined by Brett Saberhagen coming up in the 3 o'clock hour of the show. We'll continue to bounce back and forth between some Royals baseball. We'll also get you ready for this weekend in college basketball as we are narrowing this thing down and trying to figure out who is going to go to the Final Four. But you guys know the rules. If we start the show with the Royals, it can only mean one thing. I don't think Rob's ready. I think Rob, you know who Rob is? Rob's Kyle Isbell. Where's your head at, Rob? If you want to
be. Millen's misspelling baseball back here. Like, oh, that was bad. All right, Carrington, today's random Royals lineup takes us back to the year 2018, where Royals baseball was not fun anymore. because yesterday was exactly zero fun for Royals fans watching them lose. Here was your Royals opening day lineup from March 29th of 2018, where the Royals lost on this date 14-7.
Not good. Not good at all.
Defensive struggle. Only gave up two touchdowns that day. Your Royals lineup, batting first in left field, John Jay.
Ooh, I remember him, former Cardinal.
Batting second, the second baseman, Whit Merrifield.
Hey.
Batting third, the third baseman, Mike Moustakas.
Hey. Moose. Batting, I still haven't seen Moose antlers, guys. Haven't seen him.
Batting fourth, and he won it this game because batting fourth was the first baseman, Lucas Duda.
Lucas Duda was playing right field for the Royals yesterday.
Batting fifth on this date, the designated hitter, Chesler Cuthbert.
This was the product they were selling us at one point. They can't be mad when you don't go out there. This is the team they're putting together. Goodness gracious, this team is awful.
Batting sixth was the right fielder, Jorge Soler.
He probably had a good 1-for-4 day with 3 strikeouts.
He did have a walk, but no hits.
Oh, okay. All right.
Batting seventh, the center fielder, Alex Gordon.
Hey!
How do you remember his center field debut?
He probably didn't play that many games in center.
Batting eighth, the shortstop, Alcides Escobar.
My brother, my twin, my doppelganger.
And
you know how I know the Royals weren't good? Alcides Escobar is batting eighth.
And batting
whenever
ninth,
the Royals are good, he's hitting first.
And batting ninth, the catcher, Drew Butera.
Goodness gracious, that team.
The Royals used.
How did they score 7 that day?
The Royals used 8 pitchers this day.
Sure they did.
Duffy went 4, and then listen to this grouping. Here was the bullpen in 2018 on opening day. Blaine Boyer, Brad Keller, Justin Grimm, Tim Hill, Birch Smith, Brian Flynn, Brandon Maurer, and Kelvin Herrera cleaned it up in a 14-7 loss to the White Sox on opening day.
I don't know if cleaned it up is the right way to say it. I would say they made it even worse. I would say that's what they did. They made it even worse for the boys in blue. All right, coming up on the other side, I told you guys we're going to bounce back and forth between college basketball and also Major League Baseball. We are going to talk opening day. Vern's going to be on the show. Brett Saberhagen's going to be on the show today. We've got you covered as the Royals are 0-1 to start their season. Coming up, though, let's talk a little bit of college basketball as we have it down to, 10 teams left in college basketball? We are getting very close to figuring out who are going to compete in the Final Four. I had 3 questions coming into the NCAA tournament. We're starting to answer those questions. I'll tell you what they were. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. On your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, welcome back into The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here with you. We'll get back to the Royals coming up in just a little bit. I do want to talk about the Sweet 16 that we had yesterday. And maybe the NCAA tournament as a whole. Coming into this tournament, I said there were 3 major questions. As we are a little bit halfway past done with the NCAA tournament, I think we kind of have an answer to those 3 questions. Let's start with number 1. I'm willing to stand before you guys and say, hey, I was wrong about Duke. I don't care what the other teams in the ACC look like. And I was hard on the Clemsons and the Wake Forest and Louisville and all of the other dregs of the ACC. Yo, that's my bad. Because I've watched Duke heavily these last 2 games in the NCAA tournament. Hey, that team is good, man. We'll talk more specifically about Cooper Flagg here coming up in a bit. But it's not just him. James can hoop. Knipple can hoop. They got surrounding pieces. They're well coached. They can get up and run. They can defend. Hey, I was wrong about Duke. I'm willing to stand here before you guys and say, hey, I didn't understand. That is the best team in the country. Doesn't mean they're going to win this thing. Because as you are seeing in this, there's a lot of really good teams. The Duke Blue Devils have been the best team in this NCAA tournament. And if we're counting the regular season, which I know that I was discrediting the ACC and what that conference brought to the table, they've been the best team in the country for the last 90 days. And they have certainly looked the part. You know the thing that has really impressed me the most with Cooper Flagg, especially given his age, is his basketball IQ. There isn't anything that you can ask him to do that he can't do. If you need him to bring the ball up the floor and run point for you, he can. If you need to run your offense through him, you can. If you need him to step up and hit threes for you, if you need him to post up and be a more conventional big and turn around and play back to the basket, he can do that. If you need him to be a willing passer, I mean, he's throwing alley-oops. He's driving, penetrating, kick, finding open men. His basketball IQ at 18 years old is phenomenal. And he has grown from seeing him play in the very beginning of the season and watching all the YouTube highlights, getting a feel for his game as he came into college basketball, and now seeing how his game has matured. They were right. He looks like a basketball prodigy. Now, what is the ceiling for Cooper Flagg? We obviously will see as he transitions to the next level, and we don't have too many more games to see him playing at this level. He is the best college basketball player, and I don't really think that it's that close if you are factoring everything in. Age, athleticism, IQ, ability to go get a bucket defensively. He can do a lot of different things on the basketball court. So I want to at least start with one of my questions was, how is Duke going to handle being in a fight? They've handled it pretty well so far. They handled it against Baylor. They handled it against Arizona. We'll see what they look like as they continue on. And they're about to play a very strong, legitimate test in the Alabama Crimson Tide, who have shown they can score on just about anybody. They showed you that in the round of 16. So that's number one. Hey, I was wrong on Duke. I'll stand here and admit it. Make fun of me if you want. I said coming into this tournament, they were one of my big questions. They've answered it. Number two, let's stick with the Alabama theme. We don't need to keep having this conversation about the SEC every day. They were a dominant conference. And what this tournament was going to be defined by with the SEC was not going to be how Oklahoma did in round one, was not going to be how Missouri looked in round one, or if Texas was able to advance past the first four and make a run in this thing. No, how we were going to evaluate the SEC was, hey, you've told me they got four or five legit big dogs in this thing. How do those big dogs look? And you know what? Florida looks like a big dog in this thing. Auburn, the teams that you told me were good have been good and look like teams that could win the NCAA tournament. That was the point of this, right? They got seven teams in the Sweet 16. They're likely going to grab a couple of those Final Four spots. The SEC did exactly what they were supposed to do heading into this tournament. They have been a cut above the rest. All the brands and teams people told me were going to be good, they've been good. Duke came in with a lot of hype. The one seeds have come in with a lot of hype. Michigan State, the teams that people told you were going to be good, they've been good in this tournament. It's lived up to that. Sure, maybe it doesn't have the upsets. Maybe it doesn't have the surprises. It has been the marquee teams of college basketball showcasing. In fact, they were the marquee teams in college basketball this season. So that was number two. Number one was Duke. How are they going to look? Number two was the SEC. And were they going to live up to the incredibly high bar and standard that people had placed on them heading into this tournament? And the last thing was about St. John's. They were the most popular Final Four pick coming into this NCAA tournament on the gambling apps. Everybody was rooting for St. John's. Everybody wanted to see how they looked, how they handled this tournament, how they advanced. That was a major question coming into this thing. They didn't make it to round two or round three. They were eliminated in the second round. They were really the only big dog that got bit in the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. For a tournament that was incredibly chalky, it was chalky for everybody except Rick Pitino's squad. It's been chalky for everybody else. So I thought we came into this tournament with three major questions. I think we already have our answer. Now, is an SEC team going to win the national championship? We'll see. You guys know I picked Houston to win this thing at the very beginning of the season. I thought Florida is very, very good. I have Florida playing Houston in the national championship. Duke is obviously going to be a very, very difficult out in this thing. Again, the cream has certainly risen to the top. Now, maybe that's the transfer portal. Maybe that's name, image, and likeness. Whatever it is. But the teams that we expected to be good in this tournament have actually turned out to be that way. And I think it's put us in line for some really great basketball this weekend. It should be. The Elite Eight, the Final Four. We're done with Cinderella. There are no more Cinderellas. It's going to be great teams, great coaches, future pros. This is high-level basketball we are talking about now. But as we are about halfway done with this tournament and we are heading into the weekend, I do think that, Rob, the biggest questions that I had for the NCAA tournament, for the most part, I don't need to see the rest of this thing play out to at least know that those questions were answered. And now it's different questions. Can Cooper Flagg and Duke finish this thing out? Is the SEC going to win the national championship? Those are now the questions we have as we're winding this thing down.
Let's talk for me about the SEC and that question, because I think that question is still a question. If you are a conference that's going to get 14 teams in the tournament, I don't think the expectation is, well, all your good teams made the Sweet 16 Elite Eight. I don't know that's a success story yet. I think the SEC needs to get one, at minimum, into the Final Four. Because if you're going to set the record for most teams in the dance, which is what the SEC did, I don't think you can take a victory lap when, hey, look, we made the Elite Eight. Hey, look, we made the Sweet 16. That's what you're supposed to do. You have, outside of Arkansas, you have 1 and 2 seeds remaining. Congratulations, that's the job. There's more to accomplish. If the Final Four ends up being Texas Tech and Houston and Duke and Michigan State, I don't know that's a win for the SEC just because they made the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. I think you're right about Cooper Flagg. Hey, we got our question answered. I get why people are down on him. I was down on him. It's not a very sexy game. That question's been answered. Our St. John's question has been answered. I think the jury remains out on the SEC because if you're going to put 14 in the dance, you got to get one into the final weekend. You got to have one playing into that, what is it, San Antonio this year? You got to get one, especially when you're carrying a 2-seed or a 3-seed will be in the Elite Eight. We know a 2-seeded in Alabama is in the Elite Eight. And a 1-seed and probably another 1-seed, you got to cash the ticket somewhere.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just, at this point, I would be very, very surprised. And obviously, we don't have the answer yet. We're waiting to see what happens and how this weekend finishes up. I would be stunned if there was not one SEC team in the Final Four. I would be very, very surprised. Now, do they need to get two teams in the Final Four to validate all of those things? I don't know. Do they need to win the national championship to validate all of the conversation that's been around this team? That obviously remains to be seen. But I would just be, at this point, with what we've seen from the elite teams of college basketball, I would be very, very surprised. I'd be very surprised if there was not an SEC team that found itself playing into the final weekend. The basketball has just been too good. The players have just been too good. This tournament, I think, has shown you the best will be the best. There was not a lot of room for average in this tournament. There was not a lot of room for, oh, we just got hot at the right time. No, it was, this has been more of a case study of how have you looked for the 90 days before this tournament. Now, sure, there was an Arkansas team that got hot and put it together. But look at the teams that have advanced. Texas Tech, they've been very consistent this season. Duke, they've been very consistent this season. The teams that have moved on, the teams that have proven that they are worthy of playing in the Final Four have been those teams. Well, then that's your Floridas. That's your teams from the SEC that I think have proven that they are some of the best teams in the country. So those were some of my questions that we have in this thing. And obviously, we're trying to figure out who's going to San Antonio and who is going to cut down the nets in the NCAA tournament. All right, let's talk a little bit of baseball here, because you know what? Baseball should take a little bit of a lap right now. That's what it should do. Baseball should take a little bit of a lap. Because there has been a lot of conversation. And I think in some ways that conversation is dying down about, well, is baseball dying and all those things? Well, stop it. Baseball is shifting. I was listening to a podcast a couple of days ago, and the conversation was that 85% of baseball games are only available in its local market. That's obviously very different than the NFL. It's obviously very different than other sports that we watch because of the volume, because of all of those factors. So baseball has become a much more local and regional game, and it's unfair to compare it to the NFL or maybe even basketball that is it's packaged and marketed much differently. But if you look at opening day on Thursday, there were 14 baseball games. It was the most attended opening day since 2017. Baseball on Thursday, the baseball games averaged 42,000 fans. 42,000 people. That is in 14 different cities around the country bought a ticket and attended a baseball game. Attended a baseball game. Now, we'll see what the television ratings look like in those markets. I'm assuming that they are very good. Baseball is just different than the other sports. That doesn't make it worse than the other sports. It doesn't mean that something's wrong with it. It's just not football. It's just not the NBA. But all of the numbers would suggest to you, at least in terms of the on-the-field product, baseball is as healthy as it's been in quite some time. People are engaged with the product. People watch the product. People buy into the product. People follow baseball. Look at the television ratings on local levels. Look at the attendance on local levels. 42,000 people around the country at all of these ballparks made the decision to go out there and watch a baseball game. That's a sign of a very, very healthy league. So I think yesterday is a banner day. There are a lot of things that I think baseball does wrong and could even do better than this. But in terms of going to the game, the in-stadium experience, what they provide, man, the entertainment is still second to none. I thought that yesterday, Rob, was a banner day for the sport with the attendance.
I really hope, and it won't, but I hope, days like yesterday remind us that we don't have to judge everything against football. We don't. Other sports can thrive and exist and breathe in their own world. There is an appetite in this country for baseball. Is it the same appetite as football? No. There is an appetite in this country for college basketball. Is it the same as football? No. There's an appetite in this country for a lot of sports. Just because they're not football doesn't mean we have to go out of our way to run down those sports. And baseball yesterday, with those numbers, showed us again. Yeah, it's not the NFL. Nothing is the NFL. And we should celebrate baseball for what it is. A good sport that is very popular in local markets. The Royals, I saw they put out a stat that, and I was listening to Denny yesterday, it was the most attended game the Royals have had. Regular season game the Royals have had.
Since April of 2017.
Since April of 2017. Yeah. Like, Royals fans are back and going to the ballpark. Baseball fans across the sport are going to the ballpark. We don't need to get mired in every time Rob Manfred does something we don't like the ESPN, whatever. It seems like we go out of our way to run down baseball. The NFL would never do this. It's okay that baseball does different things because yesterday showed us baseball's doing fine. Is it imperfect? Yes. But I feel like the only sport that we just ignore the flaws is football. Every other sport, we fall over ourselves to point out the flaws. I hope we don't do that this year because yesterday showed us baseball is cool, opening day is cool, and people love baseball.
Yeah, I also think one of the major takeaways from how baseball is doing on a local level should go to show you that all change is not bad. Baseball purists argued adamantly against baseball moving in this direction. Now, I know now no one wants to go back and say, yeah, I was wrong, but if you were against the pitch clock, you were 100% wrong. If you were against having a ghost runner on second base and trying to speed up the game by not having 14, 15, 16 inning games, I think that the public has told you you were wrong in your evaluation of the sport, that change is not necessarily bad. And I understand that we all like things the way that they were when we were kids and what we've grown accustomed to. And that change is unfamiliar. It's different. But baseball had to change in order for it to grow. It had become a very stagnant game. People were falling out of love with the sport. I think by shrinking the game a little bit, making the games go by faster and forcing more stolen bases, more balls hit into play, it has become a faster, more exciting game, and that is exactly what baseball needs. Baseball's not going to be for everybody, and that's perfectly fine. It doesn't need to be for everybody. I still think it is a game, though, that can find the balance between the purists and the historians and the people that love baseball for the great game that it is, and also be a game for the casuals, also be a game where you want to take your family and your kids and go out to the ballpark and watch it. And that's what I think baseball is finding the perfect lane of being able to do. It is impossible, impossible to not be impressed by the numbers that baseball is putting together. So, yes, maybe it's not going to have the same national television footprint that we're used to. There is no more baseball tonight. There are no more web gyms. It's not going to lead SportsCenter the way that it did when you and I were kids. It's maybe not going to create the stars that it did when we were growing up. There is no Ken Griffey Jr. There is no Derek Jeter. There is no Frank Thomas. There is none of those. Maybe they don't have those kind of marketable players or pieces that they used to. But what you have is a product that people are willing to spend their money on and go to the ballpark and support. And if you are selling a product, I don't really know if there should be a goal that's much greater than that one. People feel comfortable enough to buy a ticket, go out there and support their local team. They feel good enough to continue to buy the hats, buy the merch, and continue to go out there. I think baseball is doing exactly what it is supposed to do in terms of getting people to engage with their product and go out there and support. All right, so let's talk about this for just a little bit. Rob, if you can hit me with a little bit of music, I've got a toss-up question that I would like to ask you guys. 913-586-7965. 913-586-7965. Rob, while you're pulling up the music here, let me just play this one more time because I think this is Denny, just being Denny.
In comes the 2-2 pitch. Ground ball third. Runner's going to try to score. The runner at third, Blanco's caught in a rundown. And now they are able to tag him out. Now the runner to second is caught between second and third. And racing back towards second out there. And then they tag the runner who came back from first base. And the Royals really botched that.
So that was Denny Matthews yesterday with the fumble. Blunder, mistake that the Royals had on second base. All right, let's do this. I've got a little bit of a toss-up question. Hit me, Rob.
Toss-up.
Who are you more mad at for yesterday? Are you more mad at Hunter Renfroe, or are you more mad at Kyle Isbell? Because I honestly have no clue what Kyle Isbell is doing. Now, maybe nothing happens. It's just first and second with one out, and we don't know how it plays out. But when Kyle Isbell runs into that second out and you go from a runner on first and third with no outs, now it's just a runner on first with two outs, you could just feel all the momentum pulled out of the stadium. You could feel it. It was palpable if you were there. Hunter Renfroe was out there. I don't know what he was doing. He misplayed a ball off the wall. He had a couple of chances to maybe get somebody at home plate, missed both of those opportunities. He missed another ball that was hitting to the outfield and allowed that one to hit the wall. Hunter Renfroe had one of those want-to-get-away days. Remember those Snicker commercials where you would eat a Snicker and would change your attitude? That's one of those days that Hunter Renfroe had. Who are you more mad at coming in today? Is it Hunter Renfroe or Kyle Isbell?
It's not really close to me. It's Hunter Renfroe. Listen, Kyle Isbell, as Denny said, boy, he really botched that one with the base-running blunder. But you know what? It's not good. I'm not going to try to defend the base-running blunder, but I can at least squint my eyes and see what he's trying to do. He's trying to make the most out of a bad situation. Outside of that, though, Isbell was on base in that moment by getting on with the air. He got the bunt down. So even if, I mean, it went perfect for him. Earlier in the game, he had a double. So he still was maybe not an overwhelming positive. He was maybe a net neutral despite the base running blunder. Hunter Renfroe was bad yesterday. Hunter Renfroe, yes, last year led baseball or was near the top of baseball in outfield assists. Yesterday, he did not look like that guy. He looked like a noodle arm out in right field. It looked like oof a couple times. And when the ball was plinkoing around in the corner, a guy who has played right field in Kansas City before looked like he was puzzled by what was happening. So I don't want to overreact. I'm not saying bench him or cut him or fire him. But when it was who had a singular worst day, I think Hunter Renfroe was nothing at the plate and was a negative in the field. Kyle Isbell had a singular horrible base running mistake, but he had a double and was on base in the eighth with a chance to take the lead. I think Kyle Isbell overall is a net neutral for the game, so I think Renfroe was actually worse yesterday.
I'm going to go with Hunter Renfroe as well. Now, I think this is true across all lines, but it's even worse when you play for the Royals. When the Royals make the decision to give you a little bit of money and fans don't feel like you live up to it, it is going to be hell for you. It is. And you're just not a good enough player offensively that if you're not going to be able to carry the team with the bat, you got to be able to carry him with the glove. I mean, you hit 229 last year and had a sub 300 on base percentage. There's not much we can do here. So it's one game. They're not making, obviously, any moves, any decisions, none of those things. But I mean, Hunter Renfroe just signed a two-year, $13 million deal, and we're halfway done with the deal. We talk about how there could be a short leash for MJ Melendez. That leash could be even shorter for Hunter Renfroe. I don't think Hunter Renfroe gets 90 days to figure things out. I think he gets maybe 60 days to try to figure some things out. So we are day one of this thing, and day one was not good. Like, it could not have gone worse for a player than it went yesterday for Hunter Renfroe. So that's certainly something to track. Of all the players that I think fans will focus in on, and we already know, with every professional sports team, there's going to be one player that gets blamed more than everybody else. Daniel Sorensen used to be that guy. We could go through countless examples. That player will be Hunter Renfroe if he doesn't figure it out in the first 45, 60 days of the season. Coming up on the other side, we'll talk about what was the top story yesterday in sports, aside from baseball. We just were off yesterday. Keep it right here. So drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
On 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, you know what? I actually want to talk about this instead. I think this will be a much more, I guess, purposeful conversation than the one that I originally had planned. We certainly have time to talk about this. So we were talking about what happened yesterday with Hunter Renfroe, and a couple of people have sent this in. CDOT, because I asked the toss-up question, was simple. The toss-up question was, are you more mad today at Kyle Isbell or Hunter Renfroe? Kyle Isbell got thrown out at second, and it just flat out shouldn't happen. Like, it just, you cannot let that happen. It's the eighth inning. You got to get one run. You're in scoring position. You've already given up an out on a play at home plate. Now you lose an out on second base. It was an unexcusable error. Hunter Renfroe had multiple mistakes out there. And a couple people have texted in. At least Isbell was trying to make something good happy. Hunter Renfroe should be worried about Jock. Someone else sent this. 913-586-7965. If he keeps playing like this, then Cags will be up by Memorial Day. I want you guys to just, let's slow down on the Jack Caglione thing just a little bit. Just a little bit. This is not an indication of what kind of player I think he is going to be. I simply just want to point out, I think he is going to spend more time in the minors than you guys think that he is going to spend. So far, Jack Caglione has played 29 minor league baseball games. He's played in 29 games. Now, I'm going to read you three, I would say, phenoms. These are three phenomenal baseball players who I would say, in a lot of ways, got fast-tracked to this stage. Got fast-tracked. All right. Let's start with Bobby Witt Jr. Because Bobby Witt Jr., not that long ago, you guys looked at like Jack Caglione. Bobby Witt Jr. played 161 games down in the minors. So if we're going off that number, Jack Caglione still has 130 more minor league baseball games to go before he's at the Bobby Witt Jr. point that they felt comfortable enough to bring him up here. All right, let's look at Mike Trout. Mike Trout's a future Hall of Famer, right? Rob, do you know how many minor league baseball games Mike Trout played before he was consistently a big league player? 291 he played. 291 he played. Let's use Bryce Harper, a kid who didn't go to college, who we have known about since he was a junior and he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He was a phenom. Bryce Harper played 141 games down in the minors. All I'm saying about Jack Caglione, again, this is not an indication of how good you think he can potentially be. I'm with you guys. We're all on the same team here. I think that Jack Caglione has a chance of being a star. They ain't calling him up with 41 games in the minors. They ain't calling him up with 45 games in the minors. He doesn't have close to nearly enough the amount of experience. He's only played in A-ball. He's never been to Northwest Arkansas. He's never been to Omaha yet. Let's at least see how he does in AA, and then we can start to have the conversation about Jack Caglione and when he comes up here. Is that fair? Now, I know I can't change everybody's mind. I can't change everybody's opinion. I'm simply just trying to give you the numbers. He has played 29 games. 29 games in A-ball. In A-ball. That's it. That's all he has. We still got a long way to go in this process. He ain't coming up by Memorial Day. He ain't coming up by the 4th of July. Maybe he'll be on next year's team. Maybe. And that'd be great. He'll be 22 years old if he's on next year's team. If Jack Caglione is on next year's team, the way that he is developing, you do have a star on your hands. But, I mean, those are three, we agree, potential first ballot Hall of Famers. It took Bobby Witt 161 games. It took Bryce Harper 200, or it took Mike Trout 291 games, and it took Bryce Harper 141. We still got a long way to go until we can start to realistically have this conversation about Jack Caglione.
I also think, and this is like, it's like a good thing for Jack, but it's also like a bad thing. He pitched and hit in college, which is super impressive. He was good at both. It's why he was one of the more interesting prospects in last year's baseball draft. He was a high-level pitcher and a high-level hitter. But you know what happens when you're doing both? You're not really playing the field in college baseball. So they don't really have a position for him defensively. And he has played, what, you said 29 games? I'm betting they've kind of just tried to figure out where to put him.
Hold on, really quick. I just want to put this up. A lot of people are saying none of those guys went to college. Of course, it took longer. You guys can give me whoever you want. I'll give you Alex Gordon as an example. Alex Gordon went to college. He went to the University of Nebraska. He played 130 games in Wichita before he got called up for the Royals when he was 23 years old. So you guys, give me a player. If you don't think that those guys fit, great. That's perfectly fine. Give me a really good major league player who went to college that came up before 100 games. It took Alex Gordon 130 games. 130. So we can find people. I'm perfectly fine to go through these examples. I'm saying is he ain't coming up with 40. He ain't coming up in 40 games, and you've never played a game in AA. It's just not realistic to start having that conversation about him yet. It's just not there yet.
I also think, I just looked it up, Buster Posey was the name that came to mind. Buster Posey won the best college baseball award. I think it's called the Golden Spike Award. Buster Posey played 172 games in minor league baseball. Buster Posey is probably going to the Hall of Fame. So, like, it's okay to be patient with Jack Caglione. We all are excited about Jack Caglione. Let's see what happens in the minors before we just anoint him. I also think to the people in the text line that are saying Paul Skenes, pitching and hitting is light years different.
Yeah, very different. Very different.
I mean, Brandon Finnegan came up immediately for the Royals and was a bullpen piece, and he was productive in the bullpen. The Royals didn't bring up Alex Gordon the first year he was drafted. It takes more time to develop hitters. That's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah, I mean, some people are bringing up the Wyatt Langford as a potential example. He came up very, very fast. He played 47 games in the minors before he eventually got called up. Okay. I mean, if that's an example that we're using, could he be him? I mean, he's played 47 games, so that means we think the Cags is coming up here in, what, the next 30, 45 days or so?
You can have him up before May in that world.
I would say that's an incredible. I would say that is a very, very fast jump, then, if that's the case. That's a very, very fast jump, then, if that's the case. I just don't think he's coming up quickly enough. Like, not as quickly as people think. I think best case scenario is he's probably on the team next year.
Wyatt Langford's also a little bit older than Jack Caglione, too. Like, Wyatt Langford's 23 years old. Jack Caglione's 21. Like, I know being in the same draft doesn't make all things equal. Like, he's got more life experience. He played longer in college baseball. Like, if we're going to use Wyatt Langford, let's acknowledge that he is an older prospect coming out of college baseball than Jack Caglione was.
Yeah, someone else on the text line says, what about Buster Posey? Buster Posey played 172 games in the minors. 172 games. Again, we can continue to go through a lot of these prospects. They just don't come up as fast as you think. I mean, I would say that Buster Posey came up pretty quick. He started playing minor league baseball at 21 years old. He got to the majors at 23 years old. That's, I would say, a pretty realistic timetable if you have a high-level prospect like Jack Caglione is. Again, I'm not telling you guys that I think he is going to be good or not being good. That's not the purpose of this conversation. Just if you think that he is coming up in 2 months, you are probably accelerating his timetable to where he is in a very, very small group of people that came up that quickly. And even if we were going off great college players, because Buster Posey, I think, is a great college player, it took him 2 years to eventually come up and play in Major League Baseball. So I don't think Cags is taking anybody's job in 2025. Could he take somebody's job in 2026? Hey, you go to Springdale, Arkansas, and you ball out down there, and you have an incredible double-A season, yeah, we can have the conversation about him coming up, and he probably will be up in that scenario. And I'm not even against the idea that he could just be fast-track, and he is that special. He doesn't need to go to Omaha. He doesn't need to waste anybody's time. We know we have something special. Again, I just think the building block of this thing is just going to take a little bit longer than people are expecting. We can keep talking Royals coming up at the top of the hour. Brett Saberhagen is going to join us coming up in the 3 o'clock hour. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.